You are a potential genius. Your amazing brain has more than 100 billion cells, each connected to as many as 20,000 other cells, and together making up so many combinations that they are reckoned to be equal to more than all the molecules in the known universe. You have the capacity to learn at incredible rates and to retain more information than you can even imagine. They say that when an educated person dies, the equivalent of a library burns down. And this potential library is contained between your ears. Throughout human history, value has always been contained in land, labor, capital, furniture, fixtures, machinery, and other hard assets. The primary creators of value were the people who could combine these various resources together to produce products and services for the marketplace. In the 20th century, however, we have seen change take place at a speed that is virtually unimaginable. In 1900, 50% of the American population lived on the farm raising food for the other 50% who lived in the cities. Today, less than 3% of the population lives on farms, and they produce enough food not only for America, but huge surpluses as well that are exported or even given away to the entire world. We've moved from the agricultural age to the industrial age to the service age to the information age, and we are now entering the communications age. The primary source of value today is not land, labor, and capital, but knowledge, information, and ideas. This means that the greatest wealth you could possibly possess is between your ears. This means that you can have an unlimited future by merely tapping into your brain power and harnessing it so that you can drive it like a powerful engine to take you anywhere or to get you anything that you want in life. The richest man in America today, and one of the richest men in the world for that matter, is Bill Gates. The net worth of his company is equal to or greater than the net worth of IBM, which has been in business for many years longer and which spans the entire globe. Microsoft is based entirely on brain power, on combining and recombining the ability to process information digitally within computers and from computer to computer by telephone lines and satellites. If you own a company, your chief assets go home every single day. At 5 o'clock, they walk out the door. Your entire building could burn to the ground, but as long as your people got out of the fire, you could walk across the street and start your business again. The chief assets of any organization, and any individual for that matter, are in brain power, not brute power. They are in mental strength rather than in physical strength. In generations past, it may have taken many years for a person to build up enough capital to start and build a successful business in manufacturing or services. Today, such a business can actually be a liability. A change in technology on the other side of the world can render a $100 million manufacturing plant obsolete in a few months. However, what you have between your ears can be invaluable. It is your chief asset. It is completely portable. It is malleable and can be shaped and increased almost without limits, if you know how. An immigrant could arrive at any major airport in America with the ability to build a billion-dollar computer industry in his head. He could walk up to customs, open his hands, and walk through saying, "Nothing to declare." His assets are all in his head. Today, the primary source of value is knowledge. And since you can get all the knowledge you want from countless sources, the amount of value that you can accumulate and create is unlimited as well. And you can start from wherever you are, no matter what your background, and begin to increase your mental assets, your ability to perform, and your income. The wonderful thing about knowledge is that it can be reproduced hundreds of thousands, even millions of times, without losing its value. It is the one commodity that can actually be infinite in its application. For example, if you come up with a new idea on how to do something faster or better, that idea can be spread around the world in no time at all and be in the hands of millions of people who can also use it to improve their lives and their work, and it still has its original value to you. This is absolutely incredible. Today, our banking and financial industries are struggling to make the shift to knowledge as an asset. Banks, for example, will only lend money today against hard assets which can be seized as collateral and sold in the marketplace. However, the real assets of a company are not the tangible items at all. They are the brain power of the people, and especially the combined brain power of teams of people working together to solve problems, create innovations, and produce goods and services for the competitive marketplace. Your ability to harness your brain power and unlock your creative abilities is absolutely essential to your success. And the wonderful news is that we know more today about how you can become smarter than we ever have before. In the last session, we talked about the winning edge concept and critical success factors. What these mean with regard to your brain power is that very small differences in the way you think can lead to tremendous differences in your performance. You don't need to go back to the university and get years of education to bring your knowledge up to the level where it can pay off for you. Sometimes very small changes in what you're doing right now, right where you are, can bring about amazing results. If a horse runs in a horse race and wins by a nose, it earns 10 times the prize money of a horse that comes in second by a nose. Does this mean that the horse that comes in first is 10 times faster? Twice as fast? 10% faster? No, the horse that wins is only a nose faster. By the same token, your possession of one small piece of information at the right time and in the right place can enable you to make an extraordinary difference in a particular situation. The most successful people today are those who are continually investing in learning and growing their intellectual asset base. They have an adaptive mentality in that they're continually open to new information and new approaches. The biggest mistake that most people make, especially those who graduate from a university, is that they come to the conclusion that everything they know at the moment is all that there really is to know about a particular subject. Sometimes they think that it is all that they need to know about a subject as well. They fall into what is called the intelligence trap of the unconscious incompetent. This is the person who does not know and does not know that he does not know. This is the truly hopeless case. The beginning of all wisdom is the awareness of how ignorant you really are. I've traveled in many countries and met many highly intelligent and successful people. I've worked with many millionaires, multimillionaires, and even billionaires. I've worked at the highest level of government with some of the smartest men and women who have ever lived. And the one thing that the very best people all have in common is that they never become impressed by their own intelligence. In fact, the smarter they get, the humbler they become, and the less they look upon themselves as experts in any way. More than 300 years ago, Roger Bacon of England was considered to be the last universal man. He was supposed to have been current with all the sciences of the day. He, in his day, knew everything there was to know about everything. But of course, at that time, the amount of knowledge available was limited. The number of books available was limited. The number of scientists and philosophers and researchers were limited as well. Today, it's impossible for one person to know everything about even one small subject. Just look at modern medicine. For example, you have great minds who spend their entire lives studying the workings of the inner ear or the trachea or one of the organs of the body. And even though these highly intelligent and dedicated professionals spend their whole lives specializing in a particular part of the body, they never learn everything there is to know about even that one organ. Sometimes I ask my audiences, if there's anyone here who's a know-it-all, of course, no one raises their hand. Then I go on to explain what a know-it-all really is. A know-it-all is a person who feels that they know everything they need to know about their subject. And how can you tell if you have become a know-it-all? Simple. You have stopped learning and growing in your area of specialization. You've stopped reading, listening to tapes, and taking additional courses. The very act of failing to continue to seek out new information in your field means that you have unconsciously, accidentally slipped into the intelligence trap of the low performer. You have unwittingly become a know-it-all by the very act of not continuing to learn and grow. Albert Einstein once gave an advanced test to a graduate class of physics students at Princeton University. On the way back to his office, his graduate assistant asked the famous professor, "Dr. Einstein, wasn't that the same exam you gave to the physics class last year?" Dr. Einstein nodded and agreed and said, yes, it was the same test as last year. The graduate student summoned up his courage and then asked, but Dr. Einstein, how could you give the same test 2 years in a row? Because, Einstein replied, in the last year, the answers have changed. Now, this is an important story. It reminds us of the fact that the answers in your field are changing as you sit there. What was true a year ago may not be true today, and what is true today may not be true a year from now. The only way that you can be assured of being on top of your field is by continually taking in new information and comparing it with the information you have today. Peter Drucker, in his book Innovation and Entrepreneurship, says that the greatest business breakthroughs take place as the result of the unexpected success or the unexpected failure. He goes on to explain that when something happens that is unusual or unexpected in your field, the person of average intelligence dismisses it as a random event or as an accident. The person of superior intelligence, however, irrespective of their IQ, looks upon each unexpected result as if it were a sign of an underlying trend or a warning of something to come. For example, in 1975, IBM commissioned consultants to study the personal computer field. They came back with the conclusion that the market for personal computers was only a few hundred in the entire world at best. Based on this information, IBM decided to concentrate its efforts on mainframes, where it was already the world leader, and ignore the PC market, leaving it to a little upstart company in Cupertino, California, called Apple. When the Apple computers hit the market and began to sell by the hundreds and then the thousands, IBM did an about-face and decided to get seriously into the small computer business. And they did. They came out with a personal computer that within 4 years captured more than 50% of the world market for smaller computers. But IBM failed to notice that a major trend had taken place. Ignoring their success in personal computers, they continued to concentrate on the development and sale of mainframe computers. While their attention was focused on mainframes, more and more competitors rushed into the personal computer field, and eventually IBM was displaced. IBM failed to see that their special success in capturing 50% of the market was indicative of a sweeping trend in computers that would change the entire world. Today, IBM is scrambling to catch up, competing with companies like Compaq, Apple, Packard Bell, Hewlett-Packard, Toshiba, and the direct mail giants like Dell and Gateway 2000. And it is unlikely that they will ever recover their position in the personal computer market. By the same token, there are changes taking place all around you today. Any one of these changes may be indicative of a trend that could lead on to fortune and success for you. You must be open, awake, and alert to these changes. You must know in your heart that nothing remains the same very long, and all your great opportunities will come from applying your knowledge and your brain power to new products and new services in the future. All you need to start a fortune is an idea that is 10% new. All you need is something that is a little better, a little different, a little newer, a little faster, or of greater value than something else that is out there, and you can elbow your way to the front of the line. Many of the great fortunes being made in America today, and throughout the world for that matter, are being made by people who were penniless a few years ago until they came up with a breakthrough idea that they were able to unleash into the marketplace. There are two major factors that stand in the way of you unlocking your brain power. We call these two factors psychosclerosis and homeostasis. Psychosclerosis is another name for a hardening of the attitudes. I have studied thinking, brain power, and decision-making for many years, and I found there's a particular type of mentality that is rigid, inflexible, and unchanging. It is the kind of mentality that becomes settled into its attitudes and then resists any attempt to change its mind. This is called the mechanical way of thinking. You probably know people who have it. On the other hand, the most successful people have the opposite, what is called the adaptive worldview. They keep their minds open to new information. They refuse to close the book or engrave their ideas in stone. They are more concerned with what's right rather than who's right. They're willing to abandon an old idea if somebody else can come along and show them a new idea has more merit. They are more in love with an idea that is right than they are with being right themselves. There have been many studies of genius made over the years. One of the most remarkable conclusions is that geniuses are not necessarily people of extraordinarily high IQ. You can actually function at genius levels based on these discoveries. Geniuses seem to have three characteristics in common, each one of which you can develop and make into a regular part of your thinking. All geniuses, by definition, seem to have open minds. They are curious, questioning, fluid, flexible, and willing to consider any possibilities. The adaptive mindset is like an open door that allows ideas to blow through from any direction and in any quantity. This is the mindset of the genius, and you can learn it. The second quality of genius that you can develop is that they all seem to approach problems and decisions systematically. They don't throw themselves at a problem like a dog chasing a car. Instead, they approach every difficult situation by asking structured questions. First of all, they ask why such a situation exists. How did it happen? Where and when did it first occur? Who is involved in it? What are the different ways that we could approach this situation? The very act of questioning opens your mind and expands your brain power. People with mechanical mindsets tend to jump to conclusions. They see a problem and they immediately decide upon a solution. They're like people leaping from rock to rock crossing a running brook. They don't stop and think that just because there is another rock there, that doesn't mean that that is the right solution. There's a direct relationship between the quantity of ideas and approaches you come up with in dealing with any situation and your likelihood of coming up with a high-quality idea that will really make a difference. You must continually resist the tendency to jump to conclusions or to rush to judgment. You must hold back like a genius and keep asking questions. Keep your mind open. If something doesn't seem workable, ask, how could this be made to work? What would you have to add to it or take away from it? What part of it would you have to do differently? Could you increase its size or decrease its size? The more you approach a problem or goal from different angles, the more likely it is that you will find a way up, over, around, or through the problem. If the truth were known, you are an idea-generating organism. Creativity is your birthright. You are a highly intelligent individual with a continuous flow of good ideas that you can use to accomplish goals that you set for yourself. In fact, even if you haven't used your creativity for a long time, and most people haven't, you can stir it up like sugar that has sunk to the bottom of a cup of coffee by revving up your creative mind with methods that we will talk about in the next session. There's a law of probabilities with regard to creative thinking and tapping into your brain power. It simply says that the more ideas that you are exposed to, the more likely it is that you will be exposed to the right idea exactly when you need it. Successful people today are those who are continually exposing themselves to a flow of new ideas from a variety of sources. Unsuccessful people, on the other hand, are those who continue to recirculate the same tired old ideas with very little imagination or creativity. For example, when you attend a seminar or lecture given by an expert who is sharing some of the most current ideas in his or her field, you will get a continuous bombardment of new insights that you can use to improve parts of your life. Many people's lives have been completely changed because they attended a single lecture given by a single intelligent person who gave them a single insight that was the key to their future. Imagine what would happen if you attended courses, seminars, and lectures on a regular basis. You would be continually bombarding your mind with new ideas that will keep your mind dancing and keep your creative juices flowing. Creative people are continually reading, not only in their own fields, but in other fields as well. They read primarily nonfiction works. They subscribe to a variety of magazines and newspapers. They're continually scanning through the tables of contents and through the critical articles. When you read, always read with a red pen or a highlighter in your hand. Even better, learn how to speed read so that you can go through material at 1,000 words a minute or better. Speed reading is a skill like riding a bicycle that anyone can learn with a few hours of application. Thereafter, you'll be able to go through more information for the rest of your life than perhaps you ever imagined possible. Effective people also make a habit of associating with other positive, creative people. They are constantly sharing ideas, cutting clippings out of magazines and newspapers and passing them on to their friends to be more effective in their work and personal lives. The second major factor that holds people back, in addition to psychosclerosis, is homeostasis. This is striving to remain constant with what you've done and said in the past. Ralph Waldo Emerson once wrote that a foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. What he goes on to say in his essay is that the natural tendency of individuals is to try to remain consistent with what they might have done and said in the past, and it blocks off almost all possibilities for growth in the future. You should always be willing to abandon your old ideas just as fast as somebody else can prove that there are newer, better ideas available. One mental approach that has been very helpful to me over the years, and which you can use to enhance your mental potential, is to be willing to admit that you are wrong. According to the research, fully 70% of all the decisions that you make in life will turn out to be wrong anyway. And this is an average. Some people's level of decision-making accuracy will be even worse. But you can assume for the time being that 7 out of 10 decisions that you make affecting your life and work will turn out to be wrong in the long run. If 70% of the decisions that managers and executives make, as well as yourself, turn out to be wrong, how can the world continue to function? The answer is simple. Superior people, those who are in charge, are those who are willing to cut their losses. They're willing to admit quickly that they've made a mistake and get out of the situation rather than persisting until it gets worse. Unfortunately, the vast majority of people fall in love with their past decisions, and once having made them, they are very reluctant to give them up, even if all the evidence is against them. Don't you be like this. Develop the habit of being the very first to recognize that a decision that you may have made or conclusion that you may have come to has been invalidated or disproven by new information. Drop the old decision and embrace the new way of doing things. According to the Manager Institute, the most important single quality that you will need to be successful in the 21st century is the quality of flexibility. This quality of flexibility refers, of course, to the way you think. It refers to your willingness to chop and change and try new things. It especially means that you have the ability to continually abandon old, outmoded ideas in favor of new, more effective ideas. I've met many individuals over the years who spend almost all of their time arguing, rationalizing, and justifying continuing to do things the old way, even though it's perfectly clear to everyone that the old way no longer works. The turning point in my life came when, as a young man in my early 20s, I discovered the miracle of personal development. My life has never been the same. I learned that through personal development, you can indeed pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. I learned that by learning what you need to learn to achieve the goals that you set for yourself, there are virtually no limits on what you can do, have, or be. The truth is that the future belongs to the competent. You could lose all of your money tomorrow, but as long as you maintained your brain power, you could make it all back and more besides. The future belongs to those who are better informed. The future belongs not to those who have more versus those who have less, but to those who know more versus those who know less. And since whatever information base you have is rapidly becoming obsolete, since information in your field is doubling every 2 to 3 years, you must be in the process of continually taking in new information and ideas just to stay even. Fortunately, there's a simple 3-part program that you can use to keep yourself ahead of the pack. I've used it and taught it to many thousands of people, and I have files full of letters from people whose entire lives have been changed as a result. The 3 keys to continuous personal and professional development are continuous reading, continuous listening to audio learning programs, and continuous training. In order to stay abreast of your field, you should read at least 1 hour per day, underlining and taking good notes. Anything less than 1 hour per day will put you in a position of being passed by your competitors. My friend Jim Rohn says that you should work at least as hard on yourself as you do on your job. At the very least, you should get up every morning and read 60 minutes in your chosen field. Take careful notes. Review the notes on a regular basis. Reflect on what you have learned and think about how you could apply it in your daily life. Use your powers of visualization to imagine yourself using the new information in some way. This will dramatically increase the speed at which you learn and retain the new ideas and increase the likelihood that you will use them at the first opportunity. If you were to read just 1 hour per day, that would translate into about 1 book per week. 1 book per week will translate into about 50 books per year. 50 books per year will translate into about 500 books over the next 10 years. According to the American Booksellers Association, fully 70% of American adults have not visited a bookstore in the last 5 years. The average American reads less than 1 book per year. 58% of adult Americans never read another book from cover to cover after they leave high school. Meanwhile, in the information age, if you're not reading continuously, you are in serious danger of being obsoleted by the passage of time. If you read 1 hour per day, 1 book per week, you will be getting the equivalent of a PhD in your field every year. You will become one of the smartest, best informed, and most productive people in your business. I have a good friend that I encouraged to read daily for 2 or 3 years. He'd gotten out of the habit of reading after he left school. He argued with me that reading wasn't that important. Meanwhile, he struggled to make a living. He was continually frustrated. He was continually bested in his sales by his competitors. Finally, he gave in, and he began to read just a little bit. He was amazed at how helpful the reading was, and how much better informed he was when he spoke to his clients. He soon began reading, as I had recommended, an hour per day, a book per week. After a year, his income had doubled. After 2 years, his income doubled again. Today, he's one of the highest-paid people in his field, and he's proud to tell me every time I see him that he very seldom ever meets a client who is as knowledgeable as he is about their field. And the more he reads, the more competent and confident he feels. The rule is that to earn more, you must learn more. You cannot move ahead in your field further than you are today, except to the degree to which you learn and practice something new. The second key to continuous learning is audio learning programs. If you travel in your work, you probably spend 500 to 1,000 hours per year in your car. If you turn this driving time into learning time, you'll get the equivalent of 3 to 6 months of 40-hour weeks of learning just driving around. I have met countless people who have doubled, tripled, and quadrupled their income by the very act of listening to audio learning programs as they drive around, as you are doing right now. The third key to continuous learning and to unlocking your mental potential is to take all the training you can get. If a training program makes it into the public arena, remember the person giving the training program has probably gotten many years of experience and may have spent hundreds of hours assembling the programs that you can take in a half or a full day. You can sometimes save yourself weeks, months, and even years of hard work by attending a seminar given by an expert who explains to you state-of-the-art ways to get your job done faster and better. When you combine these three, regular reading, regular listening to audio learning programs, and regular and continuous training, you have a dynamite combination that can propel you forward at a greater speed than you ever could without them. It's been said that knowledge is power. In fact, it is only knowledge that can be applied to practical purposes for someone else that is actually power. To unlock your mental potential, you must continually fill your mind with new ideas. You must stay current with your field. You must regularly associate with other leading people in your area of specialization. You must be continually looking for ways to do what you do better, faster, cheaper, and easier for your clients and customers. You must stay on the cutting edge of your field so that you are and you continue to be one of the most valuable people in your business. Fortunately, in the information age, knowledge is everything. And the amount of knowledge that you can gather and apply to your life is limited only by your own personal application. There are really no limits on what you can accomplish except for the limits you set on yourself. The more you learn, the more you earn. The more knowledgeable you become about your field, the more courage and confidence you have to implement your skills in everything you do. And the more courage and confidence you have, the higher will be your self-esteem and your sense of personal power. You will become virtually unstoppable in everything you do. Every change in your life will come about as the result of your current thinking, your mind, colliding with a new idea. Ideas are the keys to the future. Ideas contain the answers to all of your problems and the ways to achieve all of your goals. Your need is to become an idea generator so that you are continually coming up with new and better ideas to deal with the continuous changes and opportunities taking place around you. Fortunately, as I said in the last session, you are naturally creative. It is an innate quality. You are born with it. But creativity is subject to the law of use. If you don't use it, you lose it, at least temporarily. But you can reignite your creativity by doing certain things in certain ways, such as the methods we're talking about in this program. Thinking big means thinking big about the things that you could do, be, and have. Every person who accomplishes anything worthwhile in life begins with a big dream or a vision of what is possible for them. They ignore their current surroundings and situations and problems, and instead they imagine themselves sometime in the future living the kind of life they would like to live. You need to do the same on a regular basis. In the first session, we talked about your ideal future vision. This is where you project forward 5 years and you imagine that all of your dreams have come true. What would it look like? Where would you be? Who would be there with you? What would you be doing? How much would you be earning? Be as specific as you can. You then think back to the present day, and you think of all the things you could do to capitalize on your opportunities and to overcome or compensate for your limitations and obstacles. This is the primary use of creative thinking. It is to solve problems and to bring you breakthroughs that you can use to accelerate your progress toward the things that are most important to you. There are three key factors that trigger creativity. You can use all of them continually in everything you do. They are, first, intensely desired goals, second, pressing problems, and third, focused questions. When you bring all three of them to bear, your mind begins to function at an amazing speed, producing ideas and insights of tremendous value. You actually have three minds working for you. Most people use their conscious minds most of the time and only use their subconscious minds for the basic autonomic nervous system functions of eating, sleeping, working, basic memory, and so on. Your third mind is your superconscious mind, a mind that contains all the ideas and answers you will ever need to achieve any goal that you can set for yourself. By using the three methods of mental activation, goals, problems, and questions, you trigger all three of your minds simultaneously, and you begin to function at much higher levels than the average person. The first thing that you require is clear, specific goals. Your goals need to be written and rewritten over and over again. In fact, one of the most powerful exercises you can use to activate your creative powers is to rewrite your goals in the present tense each morning. Get yourself a spiral notebook. Each morning after your daily reading, take a few minutes and rewrite your major goals in the present tense as if they already existed. Take a few seconds after rewriting your goals and visualize them as a part of your reality. Actually see them in your mind as if they already existed. Then, smile, relax, and let go. This method of rewriting your goals, visualizing them, and then letting them go with complete confidence that they will materialize exactly when you're ready for them is extremely powerful. It not only passes your goal onto your subconscious mind, but it also activates your superconscious mind, and it begins attracting into your life the people and circumstances that can help you to achieve it. Emotion is the key. The more intensely you desire a goal, the more rapidly it materializes. Intense emotion is like stepping on the accelerator of your mental computer. It causes your mind to race. And the more positive, excited, and enthusiastic you are about achieving anything, the more rapidly your mind goes to work to bring it into your life. Another use of emotion is to calmly, confidently, and happily imagine yourself enjoying the feeling that you would have if your goal were already a part of your life. For example, if you want to earn more money and achieve a higher position in life, imagine that you're already there. Imagine how you would feel. Close your eyes and get the feeling of happiness, joy, and inner satisfaction that you would experience if you were already successful. When you can combine a clear mental picture of your goal with the same emotion that you would have if it were achieved, you activate the higher powers of your mind that trigger your creativity. These powers will then bring you insights and ideas that will help you to achieve your goal far faster. The second factor that triggers your creativity and activates your positive mind is pressing problems. Most people do not understand the true nature of problems. Problems are normal, necessary, and unavoidable part of life. Problems come in spite of your best efforts to avoid them. Problems, therefore, come unbidden. The only part of problems that you have any control over is your response to your problems. Successful, happy people respond positively and constructively to problems. This is the way they demonstrate that they have developed high levels of response ability. They have the ability to respond effectively when things happen to them that are unexpected or undesired. The more pressing your problems and the more emotion you invest in solving those problems, the more creative you will become. The key to activating your creativity in the solving of your problems is for you to define them clearly in writing. Whatever difficulties, obstacles, challenges, or factors that are hindering you or holding you back in any way, define them clearly in writing. Sometimes when you go to write down a problem, you will find that it is actually a cluster problem. It's made of several smaller problems. You then define the main problem and define the individual parts of the problem separately. Sometimes solving one part of the problem leads to the solution of the entire situation. If you're not earning the kind of money that you would like, that is an unsolved problem. A goal unachieved is an unsolved problem. an unexpected reversal or setback is a problem. In every case, your job is to not let the problem get on top of you, but for you to get on top of the problem. If I asked you what you did for a living, you would tell me what your current position or job description is. But whatever it is, what you do for a living is to solve problems. You are a professional problem solver. If there were no problems in your work, you would have no job. When people become unable to solve the problems created by their work, they are quickly replaced by people who can. When you become an excellent problem solver, you are quickly promoted to solving even bigger and more important problems. But whatever you do, you are a problem solver. The only question is whether or not you are good at solving problems. And your job is to become absolutely excellent at solving anything that the world can throw at you. The third key to activating your creativity is focused questions. Well-worded, focused, provocative, challenging questions activate your mind like sticking an electric prod in your side. The very best consultants often define themselves as insultants. They don't give answers. They instead force their clients to ask and answer tough questions. When you want to trigger your own creativity, you have to ask yourself some tough questions as well. Remember zero-based thinking? Keep asking yourself, if I were not now doing this, knowing what I now know, would I begin? You will be amazed at how creative you become when you start looking around you at every aspect of your life as though you could choose to start it again, if you wanted to, based on your current knowledge or experience. Sometimes the answer to your biggest dilemma is simply to walk away altogether. Sometimes the answer is to simply abandon a course of action that isn't working out. Some other questions that you can use to trigger your creativity are, what am I trying to do? Whenever you experience any frustration or resistance, ask yourself, how am I trying to do it? What are your assumptions? What are your obvious assumptions, and what are your unconscious assumptions? What are you assuming to be true that, if it were not true, would change your thinking altogether? For example, when I consult with a company that's trying to market a new product or service and is having difficulties in the marketplace, I ask them what the problems are, and they give me a whole list of difficulties with advertising, promotion, sales, distribution, delivery, and service. But I know that the bottom line is that their sales are not high enough. So I ask them these three questions. These are questions that you can ask when considering any new potential product or service for any market. The first question is there a market? Is there a market of people who can and will buy this product or service in competition with other products and services currently being offered? Many people start businesses without realizing how hard it is to attract a customer away from another supplier if the customer is already happy with his or her current situation. The customer is in his or her own comfort zone in that area. If the answer is yes, there is definitely a market, then my next question is the market large enough? There are many products and services that are good, valuable, and worthwhile, but there's not a large enough market to invest all the time and energy in bringing them to the market and distributing them for there to be a high potential for profitability. Many people go broke, especially in entrepreneurial ventures, because the market is simply not large enough for them to justify all the trouble of producing the product or service in the first place. Remember that every investment must be compared with every other possible investment at the same time. There may be a lot of other places that you can put your time and money. With regard to personal strategic planning, your job is to invest yourself so that you get the highest return on energy. There are 1,000 different ways that you can spend your time, your life, your most valuable resource, and you must always invest it where you can get the highest return. The third question I ask my clients is, if there is a market, and the market is large enough, is the market concentrated enough so that you can advertise and sell to it in a cost-effective way? This final question is what often sinks a new product idea. Yes, there is a market, and yes, the market is large enough, but the market is spread over such a wide geographical area that it is virtually impossible to sell to it effectively. Another factor that is extremely helpful in triggering creative ideas is contained in what is called the theory of constraints. In every activity, whatever you want to do, there are constraints or bottlenecks that determine how fast you get from where you are to where you want to go. The very act of sitting down and identifying the critical constraints in your environment often triggers ideas and insights that help you to alleviate them. For example, take your major goal, like doubling your income over the next 3 to 5 years. why isn't your income double already? Why aren't you already earning twice as much as you're earning today? What's holding you back? Of all the things that are holding you back, what's the major factor that is constraining your forward motion? The 80-20 rule seems to apply to constraints. This rule in this context says that 80% of the constraints that are holding you back from achieving your goals are inside of you, are within you. Only 20% are in the outside world. The vast majority of people think that their major problems are contained in the situations and circumstances around them, but this is usually untrue. Most of the reasons why you are not moving ahead have to do with your own lack of skills, lack of abilities, or personality traits. Let us say, for example, that you are in sales. You want to double your income in the next 3 to 5 years, if not sooner. The critical constraint is the amount of your product or service that you sell. Once you've identified this main constraint, you then ask, what is the constraint behind that? This next constraint may be in the number of prospects that you have to talk to. You again look behind that constraint and ask, what is the constraint that is causing this limitation? It may be your ability to prospect, something that is inside of you rather than in the marketplace. One good way to test whether the constraint is internal or external is to look around you and see if anyone else is accomplishing the same goals that you want to accomplish. Is anyone else already earning twice as much as you are earning, selling the same product or service in the same market? If someone is already doing it, then the constraint is internal, not external. It is something inside you. It is the lack of a particular ability or attribute that you need to overcome. They say that when a man's fight begins with himself, he is really worth something. The superior person always asks the question, what is it in me that is holding me back? Superior people always look to themselves first. It may very well be that it is something in your outside world that is acting as the brake on your potentialities, but the place to start looking is inside. The odds are you'll find it there. With these triggers, you are on your way to turning up your creative capacity, like turning up the light in a dark room with a dimmer switch. When you set clear goals that you have a burning desire to achieve, combined with pressing problems that you have clearly defined and focused questions that provoke your thinking, you can then identify the key constraints and go to work to alleviate them. Sometimes the removal of one key constraint with an idea that you generate can put you onto the high road toward achieving your most important goals. You have at least 10 different forms of intelligence, according to the work of Howard Gardner at Harvard and of Charles Handy of England. Throughout your schooling, you were tested only on the basis of your verbal and mathematical intelligences. But research in the last few years indicates that you have a variety of intelligences, in any one of which you could be a genius, and in combination they allow you to accomplish extraordinary things. Your main job is to identify your predominant intelligence or intelligences and then apply yourself using that intelligence to achieve whatever it is that you want in life. Your first intelligence is verbal. This is your ability to speak, your command of language. This ability to understand and to use language well is closely associated with success in any field that involves communication with others. Your second intelligence is mathematical. This is your ability to use numbers skillfully, to add, subtract, divide, and multiply. It's your ability to read financial statements and develop financial ratios. It's your ability to develop pro forma statements that enable you to analyze the pros or cons of a particular investment or expenditure. Your third form of intelligence is physical intelligence. This is the intelligence enjoyed by top athletes who have extraordinary abilities of timing and coordination in the movement and use of their bodies. A person could fail in school on verbal and mathematical tests and still be an extraordinary success athletically, even though it would never show up on a report card. Your fourth form of intelligence is musical. A Mozart or a Beethoven could have been poor at sports and poor in school and yet contributed classical music that rings down the ages. Many musicians today who are at the top of their fields did poorly in conventional school subjects, but they had an innate ability to create and express music that was in the exceptional range. Your fifth form of intelligence is visual and spatial intelligence. This is the ability to see shapes and forms and patterns. An architect, an engineer, a painter, or a person who has developed the capacity to visualize very clearly would have this intelligence. An architect, for example, might be able to develop, first in his mind and then on paper, beautiful buildings that then people with higher levels of mathematical intelligence would be able to convert into blueprints and exact dimensions for construction. Your sixth form of intelligence is interpersonal. This is the highest paid form of intelligence in America. It's the ability to communicate, negotiate, influence, and persuade other people. It consists of a high degree of sensitivity to the moods and thoughts and feelings of others, and the ability to interact with them effectively to get things done, both with and through them. Managers, team leaders, and salespeople usually have interpersonal intelligence developed to a very high degree. As a result, people want to work with them and cooperate with them in the purchase or sale of products and in the accomplishment of group goals. The highest paid salespeople, business people, professionals, consultants, and even politicians have very high levels of interpersonal intelligence. This may be your particular area of genius as well. Your seventh form of intelligence is intrapersonal intelligence. This is an advanced ability to be extremely aware of yourself, to know exactly what you want and what you don't want, and to be able to set goals and make plans for their accomplishment. People with high levels of intrapersonal intelligence spend a good deal of time reflecting on how they are thinking and feeling. They therefore know themselves better and are then more effective in dealing with others. Your eighth form of intelligence is entrepreneurial intelligence. This is the ability to see market opportunities and then to combine various resources together to produce products and services that can be sold at a profit. Entrepreneurial intelligence is one of the highest paid in our society today and is the foundation of all successful, fast-growing businesses. Your ninth form of intelligence is intuitive intelligence. This is the ability to sense the rightness or wrongness of a situation, to judge people quickly and accurately, to come up with ideas and insights using your intuitive abilities. Your tenth form of intelligence, and there may be others, is abstract or conceptual intelligence. This is the kind of intelligence possessed by an Einstein who could see himself riding on a beam of light. As a result, he was able to formulate the theory of relativity, which completely revolutionized physics in the 20th century. You can imagine that these 10 intelligences are like the digits from 0 through 9. If you take any large city, you will find that there are hundreds of thousands of people with different telephone numbers, even though all of their telephone numbers are made up of 7 of those 10 digits. It's the same with you. Your unique combination of intelligences, especially your 7 best intelligences, form a kind of personal intellectual telephone number that makes you different from every other person and simultaneously capable of performing at extraordinary levels. What you need to do is to identify your intelligences, be aware of them, and respect them. You need to develop a high level of faith and confidence in your ability to use your mental powers to overcome any obstacle and achieve any goal that you can set for yourself. You also have 3 ways of learning: auditory, visual, and kinesthetic. You can either learn by listening, learn by seeing, or learn by feeling and by movement. Each person learns using all 3, but each person also has what is called a preferred learning style. When you combine your dominant intelligences with your preferred method of learning, you create a combination of intelligence and ability that can enable you to achieve remarkable things with your life. There are 2 powerful methods that you can use to unlock your brain power and to generate ideas for goal achievement. These are mindstorming and brainstorming. The first will make you rich, and the second will enable you to tap into the brain power of other people. The process of mindstorming, or what is called the 20-idea method, is so powerful that when you begin using it, your entire life will change. I learned it from Earl Nightingale many years ago, and I've taught it to many tens of thousands of people. I've never found a person who has not seen profound improvements in each part of their life to which this method was applied. And it will work for you very quickly and easily once you start using it. This is how it goes. Take a blank sheet of paper and write your current problem or goal at the top of the page in the form of a question. Again, let us say your goal is to double your income. Try to make the question as specific as possible. The more specific the question, the better your mind can focus on it and the better quality of answers you will generate. So instead of saying, "How can I make more money?" you would say instead, "What can I do to double my income over the next 24 months?" Write this down at the top of the page. Then, generate 20 different answers to that question. Force yourself to write out 20 different things that you can think of doing, either immediately or later, that would enable you to double your income. For example, you would probably start off with simple answers, as most people do. You could write, work harder, work longer, upgrade my education, improve my skills in a specific area, and so on. After the first 3 to 5 simple answers, it will start to get tougher and tougher for you. The second 5 answers will be harder, and the last 10 answers will be like squeezing water out of a stone. But you must force yourself to stay at the piece of paper until you have answered the question with at least 20 different answers. You can play with these answers if you like. For example, you may decide to write the exact opposite of one of your earlier answers. You can also come up with ridiculous answers as well. For example, someone might say, work harder at my current job. The next answer might be, work less hard at a different job. Or it may be to create your own job. Or it may be to get a second income job. If your income depends upon selling and your success in selling depends upon prospecting, your answer could be to double the number of qualified prospects that you see each week. Or it could be to see higher potential prospects who have the ability to buy twice as much of your product. Or it could be to sell a different product with a higher commission per sale. In any case, the potential answers are limited only by your imagination, and your capacity to generate ideas to help you is, to all intents and purposes, infinite. Once you've answered the question with at least 20 answers, and you can write more if they come to you, go back over the answers and select at least one solution to be implemented immediately. This is extremely important. What keeps the flow of ideas running through your mind is your willingness to take action of some kind once you've generated the ideas in the first place. A friend of mine recently told me of an exercise in addition to this 20-idea method that he had developed. He said that once he had generated his 20 ideas and selected the one idea he was going to implement immediately, he then performed the 20-idea method on that new idea, generating 20 different ways to put that idea to work. You can do either the first of these mindstorming exercises or both if you like, but once you've implemented the first idea, you'll find that you'll begin coming up with other ideas as well. If you do this exercise in the morning before you start out, you'll find yourself thinking creatively all day long. Your mind will be fast, sharp, and alert. You'll see solutions to problems and obstacles as fast as they come up. If you do this exercise every day for just 5 days, you will generate 100 new ideas to help you achieve your goals. When you consider that the average person doesn't come up with more than 1 or 2 ideas per year, by practicing mindstorming on a regular basis, you will soon have so many good ideas that there will not be enough hours in the day to carry them out. More people have become rich using this idea than any other method of creative thinking ever known to man. The only thing it requires is your willingness to use mindstorming regularly and to apply the ideas you generate until this becomes a regular habit for you. The second form of creative thinking for unlocking your brain power is a method you can use with 2 or more people. It's called brainstorming and is a form of mindstorming done in a group, but it has slightly different rules. Brainstorming was originally developed by Alex Osborne and first described in his 1946 book, Applied Imagination. It has since proliferated and is used all over the world in every type of organization and situation to generate a variety of options to any problem. I've personally taught brainstorming to thousands of the executives and staff of some of the world's largest corporations. It's a very simple process to learn and use. First, the ideal number of people in a brainstorming session is from 4 to 7. Below 4, you don't have enough minds to generate a large enough variety of different approaches to the question, and above 7, it becomes too unwieldy and people don't get a chance to contribute. The critical part of brainstorming is that no evaluation of the ideas takes place during the brainstorming session. The entire focus of the brainstorming session is on generating the greatest quantity of ideas possible within a short period of time. The ideal length for brainstorming sessions varies from 15 to 45 minutes. One of the jobs of managers and team leaders is to sit their staff down on a regular basis to brainstorm certain problems. Just call everyone in and announce that you're going to brainstorm a particular goal or situation for 15 minutes, and then everyone is going to go back to work. You'll be amazed at the results. There are 2 key players in a brainstorming session. The first is the leader. The leader's job is to encourage everyone to contribute as much as possible. One of the best ways to lead a brainstorming session is to go around the table and encourage each person to throw in an idea, almost like playing cards where you encourage each person to bet or pass. Once you've gone around the table a couple of times, people will start generating ideas at a rapid rate. The second key function in a brainstorming session is that of the recorder. This is a person who writes down the ideas as they're generated. In some brainstorming sessions, everyone starts with a stack of index cards in front of them, and as they generate an idea, they write it down and throw it into the center. At the end of the brainstorming session, all the ideas are gathered up for evaluation later. Start and stop the brainstorming session exactly on time, no matter how well it's going. Then, you gather up all the ideas and take them away to be reviewed at a later time. In some brainstorming exercises, we use index cards and we break the group up into smaller groups. Each of the smaller groups will generate ideas and answers to a single question. Afterwards, the index cards are collected and shuffled and then handed out to the groups completely mixed up. In the second phase of the exercise, each group is asked to take the cards that they have and evaluate them, judging them in terms of their value prior to reporting back to the group. In a session with 20 or 30 people, 200 or 300 ideas can be generated, and those ideas can then be organized and evaluated and reported back. The results are absolutely astonishing. I've worked with companies that have come up with so many solutions to problems that have been stumping them that they didn't have enough hours in the day or enough people to apply them all. By the way, if you're in a good relationship with another person, you form an excellent brainstorming team. A husband and wife, or even two friends together, can be excellent at brainstorming as long as they don't attempt to evaluate the ideas at the same time that they're generating them. What kills a brainstorming session is the tendency of people to criticize the ideas as they're generated. As soon as one person's ideas are criticized, the brainstorming session shuts off. No one wants to stick their neck out. No one wants to be humiliated or ridiculed in front of others. That is why it's so important that you concentrate on the number of ideas and leave the evaluation of the ideas to another time or to other people. The most important part of unlocking your mental potential and harnessing the genius that lies within you is to first of all accept that you are extremely intelligent, and second of all, to use all the methods that we have talked about to generate ideas to help you achieve your goals. There's something exciting and uplifting about coming up with ideas that help you. The more ideas you generate, the more energy and enthusiasm you have. The more energy and enthusiasm you have, the more confident you will be that you can achieve your goals. The bigger you think about yourself and your potential in the course of unlocking your mental abilities, the greater goals you will set and the more wonderful things you will accomplish, because you really are a genius.